Good evening. I am a proud member of the League of Women Voters of the Ann Arbor area, and since 1972, the League has been open to membership by men. I have my proud Not for Women Only badge. So, women, men, families, stop at our table in the back, look for our membership materials. There's some good programs coming up in the near future that are designed for members, so go take a look. And this week, in the aftermath of the inauguration and the marches, this would be a really good time to be part of an organization whose slogan is Make Democracy Work. Founded in 1920, the League of Women Voters is a nonpartisan political organization. Nonpartisan political organization that does not support candidates or parties. What it does is to study and take positions on key issues. League members come together and develop big picture consensus positions on these issues, and then we then use these positions when we do advocacy work on those issues. This past year, the League has been reviewing our position on government finance, and we're happy that some of our findings that we're able to share these with you this evening. And tonight's panel will focus on one element of government finance, how the state legislature supports local governments in Michigan. To share their expertise, we're delighted to have with us Kelly Belknap, the Chief Financial Officer of Washtenaw County. Tom Crawford, the Chief Financial Officer of the City of Ann Arbor, and Mandy Graywall, Township Supervisor from Pittsfield Township. Let's look at an overview. Michigan's budget, and we're using the 2014-2015 numbers, totals just under $54 billion. As you can see, there are three major revenue sources and three major divisions of use. That's the easy part. A critical point is that the vast majority of expenditures are fixed. Federal funds at the bottom, that grayish area in our pie chart, mostly for Medicaid. The school aid fund, the red section of our pie chart. Other restricted funds, light purple, these are fixed so that the unrestricted funds in the GFGP, the general fund, general purpose budget, the pie chart section in light green, less than 20% of the total, these are the unrestricted funds. Less than $10 billion out of the total $54 billion budget. And the GFGP budget, looking at the box on the right side of the slide, the general fund, general purpose budget is itself obligated into designated areas. At the top, you'll see health and human services is a big chunk. The two at the bottom are corrections, higher ed, and community community colleges, so that the other general fund, general purpose, that pumpkin, we decided it was a pumpkin-colored segment, less than 5% of the overall budget out of $53 plus billion, the unrestricted other is only $2.5 billion. That does not give the legislature a lot of fiscal latitude. So where do local governments fit into this picture? Property taxes are the primary revenue source. These go to Lansing and need to be returned to local governments for their use. However, as I'm sure our panelists will make clear, this process is uneven. Vulnerable seems to be a good word. Michigan collects a 6% sales tax. However, as per Proposal A in 1994, the newer 2% is designated for the school aid fund, so revenue sharing comes out of the original 4% sales tax level, and there are two types. Revenue sharing set by the Constitution, 15% of the 4% goes to local governments on a per capita basis. Sounds pretty solid, except that, of course, in an economic downturn, property values are lowered. This reduces property taxes collected, and the downturn also shrinks sales tax revenue. So even the amount resulting from a fixed 15% of the 4%, this will also decline in an economic downturn, as we've been having. There is also the revenue sharing set by statute. Some portion of another 21.3% of the 4%, as set by the legislature, as determined by the legislature, is also distributed to the counties and CVTs, the cities, villages, and townships. It seems a bit complicated, right? I guess the real question is, how is it all turning out? Oops. As you can see, since 2002, the gap between the full funding, the red line at the top, and actual funding, the gap has continued to increase. So that in FY16 on the far right, the gap, the underfunding from full funding, is now more than $500 million, more than half a billion dollars. A new report from the Michigan Municipal League yesterday, if I understand the timing, says that since 2002, cities and villages in Michigan have lost a total of, anybody want to take a guess? $7.5 billion in the last 15 years. Underfunding of full revenue sharing, 15 years, $7.5 billion. So, funding for local governments is under stress for multiple reasons. I mentioned that Michigan's property tax revenues declined when the property values dropped at the beginning of the economic decline a decade ago. As property values have since recovered, provisions of the 1978 Headley Amendment, as well as the 1994 Proposal A, have prevented property tax revenues from catching back up. Moreover, local governments are prohibited from levying their own sales taxes, and only certain cities levy an income tax. Our panelists are here to tell us more. I'm very pleased that we have three very knowledgeable officials, and I'm going to turn this over now to Kelly Belknap, the Chief Financial Officer from the county, who's going to explain how well it's all working. Should I blank the slide?
Okay. Thank you. Good evening. It's nice to see a room full of people like this interested. It's very nice. I work for Washtenaw County, the Chief Financial Officer there, so I'm one of the people who get to directly deal or try to figure out some of the things the state has been pushing down to us. As Harvey stated, you know, we are funded by statute. We are the county as a statutory funder. Our revenue sharing funds have been fairly flat. And a little point to make it clear is that for 2017, we will receive about $6.9 million if for 2017 under our revenue sharing. In 2001, which was the last year of the old formula methodology, we received $6.9 million. I think that's a pretty relative, that has been flat funding, no adjustments for anything. So that has been a very static revenue for the county. We, you know, with methodology changing, when they did that in 2002, what they also changed is how we collected our property tax revenue. Now, that's revenue that's gone up and down, but prior to this new methodology going into place, we had collected our property tax revenue in this December of the month year prior of when we'd use it. So December 2016, we would have collected our taxes and had that for operational purposes in 2017. Now, due to the change that came along with the change in methodology for revenue sharing, they also pushed back our tax collection. We can no longer can collect our taxes, levy our taxes, until July of the year we're in, 2017, which means the county has to always have on hand enough cash to float the first 6 to 7 months of every fiscal year. That was the other trick that was pulled into that puzzle that they did. So that has also has problems. Also, we've had to be make sure our cash flow is there because we want to be able to pay our bills, pay our staff. Over the years, we've also, as mentioned, we've met with the economic downturn. That did impact our property tax revenue considerably. The state, the county has had to make numerous budget reductions since beginning really in 2009. We faced almost $73 million in budget reductions since 2009 to now. We've lost, due to reaction to that, what we've had to do is that we've had to ask each of our departments, our public health, our mental health, our drains, all the various departments that do work, our courts, our police services, have all had to take reductions, some up to 20%. What that means is it translates to you and citizens is that non-mandated programs have been either greatly reduced or eliminated. Mandated services, the level of serviceability has been brought down to a very low level, as far down as we can, just because there's only so much you can do with staffing at that point in time. Many of the staff took reductions in salary, 5 and 10%, freezing of pay. Multiple steps were taken to try and bring those costs under control. Even today, as you're seeing the nation and the state coming out of the decline, here in Michigan, as Harvey has referenced, due to Proposal A and Headley, our property tax revenue growth is now matched by the CPI. It can be no more than the CPI. In last year, it was 0.3%. And because that point, because the CPI was so low for Washtenaw County, we had a Headley rollback, which means that the millage that we may charge for collection was reduced. That translated into a loss of revenue about $450,000, and that's structural dollars that will go into perpetuity. We will never get back. The CPI going into 2017 is 0.9%. Which on one hand is really good for the homeowners that their property taxes don't go up, but at the same time, as our population in the county grows, as any needs grow, we don't have the revenues to always provide the services that we're looking to provide at the level that we want to provide them. So it's a balancing act. Some of our buildings, some of the buildings you are as taxpayers help to support, we can do only minimal levels of maintenance and critical replacement only of infrastructure and equipment. Again, because we're trying to balance the needs of the community and the people we serve to also keep the buildings operating so there's not critical failure, but there's nothing extra going on there. So we just saw our first growth in property tax was after we came out of the 8-year decline was in 2013. We had a 1.3% increase in property tax revenue, which was nice. 2014, we saw the 2.4%. Again, that gives us stability because we always budget for about if we're not in a cut, we budget for about a 1% tax growth because of corresponding costs that are always going up for everybody. So many actions have been taken to, with state funding is flat. We also were recipient of cigarette and liquor tax over a 12-year period that has increased by $33,000. For our property tax revenue, when I looked at a 12-year history there, the increase was about $1.3 million. So revenues are flat. The state continues to push down mandated services they don't want to fund or choose to reduce their funding level. So we continue to work to try and find answer solutions to still get services out to the community, and especially in our human services area and also in our policing community. We want those people out there on the roads and out serving the community because they have the most one-to-one direct contact with everybody out there in our community. So those are some things we're looking forward there. Looking at my notes, like I said, the most interesting was in 2001 to now in our revenue sharing, $3,000 more over a 16-year period. I think that tells a lot about where the revenue has not been flowing down to the local units. Thank you.
Tom Crawford from the city of Ann Arbor is going to tell us how much better it is at the city level.
Thank you, Harpy. There we go. Okay. I won't repeat some of what Harvey said, but the state shared revenues for the city really come in two primary areas for our general fund. And you have to remember that in all of government, when you receive funds, they usually come with a restriction that they can only be used for certain purposes. In this case, state shared revenues are able to go into our fund, which is unrestricted, and that's our general fund. Our two primary uses of those funds are for so this would supplement tax revenues for the city, and we have the state shared revenue, which is based on sales tax, so that's a receipt for this general fund. As is, we have a fire protection grant, which helps communities with state property fund services for fire to cover the state properties. In the city of Ann Arbor, the state shared revenue portion for the sales tax is about 13% of our total revenue. And that may not sound like a whole lot to you, but it actually is a significant portion. Property taxes make up about 65% of the general fund. The next largest revenue source is state shared revenues. It has changed over time. I'll give you a graph here on the way it's been allocated. This is the city's history of what we call state shared revenues, so it's only the sales tax portion, since 2001. And you'll see that it was around $14 million at that time. The yellow portion represents what is in the state constitution, the constitutional portion, which the legislature must return to the cities. The portion above that, in the two different colors, is the portion that is controlled by the legislature. There's a formula in the law for that. Around 2001, when I went back and looked, they realized that they actually didn't have to send it all to locals, even though it's in the law. So when they figured that out, it started out kind of slowly, but you can see if you had a line, you would see that it would tend to increase from 2001. So the gap has been widening, as Harvey mentioned earlier. So for the city of Ann Arbor, we are now still much lower. We're around $11 million, if I remember correctly. I can't see. So we're below where we were in 2001. Having that negative growth during this time period particularly is a really difficult challenge. The difference in colors that reflects one of the changes in the rules, it used to be a pure appropriation decision from the legislature in the blue area. When it moved to the other area, they changed it so they also required cities to do certain things in order to qualify to get any of it. Those things were driven by policy desires at the time. So they involved restrictions around how you benefits you could issue for health care, reporting guidelines, these kind of things. SEMCOG is Southeast Michigan Council of Governments, so I borrowed one of their slides, which I thought was an interesting analysis they performed a couple years ago, just to highlight a point. In this slide, it's all revenues. It's not just state shared revenues, okay? The green line represents the amount of total, the amount of state revenues as they went up, and there's a definition of how they calculated those. And the yellow line represents the local revenues. Now, what's interesting to see this kind of at a very high macro level is you'll see that the state revenues have increased at the same time that, for the most part, the local revenues have stayed flat. And even when you go to look at the downturn, you can see the downturn occur, it's really only come up a little. So what this illustrates at a macro level is what we've been experiencing on state shared revenues, which, as the state has its own interest to fund and move, they've used this ability to squeeze the locals to help their issues. On the fire protection grant, this is, instead of sales tax, this comes from bad driver user fees. I forget. They collect a number. If you're a poor driver, you get some really bad tickets. I'm forgetting the name of the specific fee. That goes into a fund. That fund is then distributed out to the locals. So in Ann Arbor, this is significant. We have a lot of state property, University of Michigan estate property, and you can imagine all that square footage needs fire service. So the city provides that fire service. The reimbursement we get for that comes from the state. What is particularly noticeable here is that the density of the development and the structures are very intense, large commercial-type buildings. And so we presently get $925,000 for that. That is about, and that's down from 2006 when that was the peak that we received. The 925, I was trying to figure out, is around 40 to 45% of what the formula says. So again, this is an area where when the people create a policy and put it into law, it was they have a formula to make things work, and they're applying 40% of that formula for locals. So both of these things together have created challenges for the city, and we've done what many other cities have done, what the county has done. And there's only a few things you can do. You know, you can reduce costs, you can reallocate costs, if you can, between the restricted funds to the extent that it's permissible. And then you can look at revenues, either diversifying revenues, because we have very limited capability, or increasing revenues. So the diversification of revenues is interesting, because one of the reasons that we got into the state shared revenue program, that it was created, was because they took the ability of locals to have taxes away from them. So a local government can have an income tax if the voters vote for it. A local government cannot have a local sales tax, because we have state shared revenues. The local government cannot have an entertainment tax, which for here could be beneficial if you think football stadium. You know, I mean, we are not permitted by law to get other methods. So we're restricted from having the ability to go get more revenue in many cases. And then we operate in a structure that really reduces your revenue during downturn and caps it during upturn rebounds. So it's been a difficult economic environment. As far as, you know, the city of Ann Arbor, you know, some of our larger expenses are obviously around our employees. The wages, the pensions, and retiree health care are challenges we all have. And I think it's fair to say we've all done similar things. You reduce benefits, you require more contributions from employees, the city has to contribute more, done all those things. Where are we in today? When you look at a very macro level, is I think we're at a position where cities and government organizations are challenged to attract talented people. And this is a time when you want talented people, because we're operating with more. One of the strategies, and back up for a second, the city of Ann Arbor did, is that we, as the recession occurred and as we had structural issues, we reduced employees. So in 2001, we had over 1,000 employees, 1,002 or something. And today, well, at our low point, we're at 685. So we really cut a lot of employees. And for the most part, we got a lot of efficiencies out of the organization. This is, you know, there's a lot of good stuff in there, okay? The services have been impacted to some extent. But for a large part, that was primary. We're going to do it in a different way. We're going to invest in technology. We're going to invest in many things that would be less expensive than employees. In a macro perspective, in my view, we're reaching the point where you need talented people, and it's really, you've kind of starved the beast so much that you have to ask yourself, what are we going to have? And that's, so this is, state shared revenues for the city is one piece of that, but it is a large part of a larger philosophy that I think has been applied to finances in Michigan for counties, cities, and townships.
So Mandy, the township level, is that where it's all working okay?
Sorry to say, no magic bullet here either. I know. And I was sitting there listening to the previous three speakers. I wondered what I could bring to the table, because all of that they've said is very much true and reflective of what we have seen and experienced in Pittsfield Township as well. State revenue sharing is going down, property taxes are going down, we are doing more with less. It's an adage we're so used to hearing, but it is absolutely true. The numbers speak for themselves. We are functioning at essentially the same revenues that we had 15 years ago. Cost of inflation, healthcare costs, all of those things have gone up tremendously in double digits, but yet you're expecting your public units of government to continue to work with revenues that they had 15 years ago. In Pittsfield Township, I can sort of give you a little bit of example of, sort of expound a little bit more in terms of our specific experience. But like I said, I think what I want to talk about more and sort of bring a different take to it, because I don't want to regurgitate what they've said before and said it so well, is to maybe put more of a human face, a sort of a more day-to-day social impact sort of scenario to what it is that is happening and is going to likely happen in the future as well. So in Pittsfield Township, to expand a little bit more on our experience, we are functioning, like I said, essentially at the same revenue levels that we were 15 years ago. Our state revenue sharing is pretty up and down. And I think the study that you referenced, Tom, from SEMCOG, that came out in November of 2014, I sat on that task force, is really eye-opening for me, because essentially it says that the state of Michigan, which is one of the very few states in the nation, is balancing its budget on the backs of local units, and that's exactly what's happening here in the state of Michigan. We have seen at the cities, counties, villages, and townships a decline in revenue, while they have seen an increase, and that increase is then appropriated by them for various policies initiatives that they have prioritized based on the legislation that is in power at the time. So with that said, again, and speaking about sort of the policies that they've passed and put on the ballot and that have been approved, one of the things that hasn't been talked about that has had an impact in Pittsfield is also the personal property tax exemption that was on the ballot and was approved and has sort of been put into place in stages as it was intended to do since 2012 with the manufacturing exemptions kicking in just last year. And we're losing close to $11 million in revenue from what we're collecting in Pittsfield Township. That's not revenues for Pittsfield Township. It includes our schools, it includes the libraries, it includes the county, it includes all taxing jurisdictions are losing $11 million in 2016 because of that manufacturing exemption that was passed. So these decisions and policies have implications. And what are those implications? So like I said, I want to probably spend more time talking about what this means for our community today and what it's likely going to mean moving forward. I'm a planner, I should fess up by training, and I might be biased, and that's sort of the perspective I bring to the table, though, because when Kelly was standing here and saying, you know, they've made these cuts in millions of dollars in deficits, how do they meet them? They cut the library for the blind. Head Start was cut. Washtenaw County no longer has a Head Start program. We do not fund folks that are disadvantaged. We do not try to give them the same access to resources and services. We don't do that stuff anymore. We in Pittsfield Township have cut services. The city is cutting services. You very recently, in just 3 months ago in November, approved a millage, a road millage. Why did you do that? This is the first time that Washtenaw County has imposed a millage for roads, because the state is backing away from its responsibilities. We're still paying, my residents, you all are still paying what you were paying 10 years ago in roads. Nobody came to you then and said, hey, we need to put a tax on the ballot and you need to start paying more for maintaining your roads, for repairing the bridges that are failing miserably. I'm not saying it wasn't needed, absolutely, but why are we being taxed even more? So the locals are stepping up and paying even more to capture revenues that is in direct control of them so that it's not being sent to the state so they can redirect it and use it for things that were using it 10 years ago that was actually getting redirected back to them. So the point I'm trying to make is that the burden on locals is not just governments. It's not just Tom, Kelly, and I standing here and saying, you know, we've crunched the numbers, we've laid off people, we've extracted efficiencies, we've done all that we can, because we have. We've done all of those things. What it also means is that the quality of services that we're providing and the type of services that we're providing in this community is being severely impacted. It speaks to the type of communities that we have become and are likely going to become. What are we going to communicate 10 years from now when we tell our kids, yeah, we didn't have money to put in the parks. We needed to pay the police officer to make sure that we had traffic control or crime control, basic stuff, right? I mean, what are our priorities? How are we going to fight this? The report that came out of SEMCOG, you know, again, calls out what Harvey mentioned, you know, the Headley and the Prop A. It's squeezing locals, right? Constitutional amendments, what is it that we really need to do to get those revenue streams back to the locals? And again, I may be biased because I have worked in county or township, you know, for the last decade or so, but I do believe that that is the most accountable form of government, and it is the government and the units that actually provide day-to-day services to you. And if we don't have the ability to provide those services, there's just so much more we can do. You know, the county used to be able to cover tree clearance, just small things, you know, picking up dead deer from and tree clearance. The Washtenaw County Road Commission now has one person assigned for tree clearance countywide. This is a pretty big county. They used to have about 4 to 5 people. So it's just, I think we really have to step back and think about what we're doing. And I'd actually go one step further and say that we're very fortunate to live in Washtenaw County. I'm very fortunate to live in Pittsville Township. We didn't even have to do the Headley rollback because our economy is growing. We're adding new development. And that's, again, actually one of the things that is a result of Headley and Prop A is the only way that local units can increase their revenues outside of getting monies from property taxes and state revenue sharing is by new development. It doesn't have to do with economic revitalization. If I took an existing building, revamped it, and made it look good, I'm not going to see the tax capture. But if I built a new building, I turned green into gray, I'd get more taxes. So how are you incentivizing? You're incentivizing sprawl. You're not incentivizing sustainable, densified living. Again, you know, I'm bringing it from a planner's perspective, but again, you know, these policies are not good. We have communities that are decaying, and they cannot come up because they don't have new development. They're revitalizing their downtowns, but it's not new development, so they don't get that same sort of tax capture and the same sort of revenues. And then again, the point I was trying to make with Washtenaw County, we're fortunate to live here. What about the counties and communities that don't have the economic base that we do? You're increasingly going to then start seeing these bubbles. We could tax ourselves. That road millage passed by 70-some percent in Washtenaw County because people have the wherewithal. They want good roads. They said, fine, tax us. We'll pay for it, and we'll have good roads. How about downriver? How about Wayne County? $20 a month makes a difference. $50 a month makes a difference. So guess what? You cross county lines, and suddenly the roads are terrible. Is that the state that we want to live in, that is demarcated geographically even now based on socioeconomics? So I might be digressing again. I didn't want to regurgitate. I threw all of my presentation out the window, and I thought I'd sort of bring a new perspective here so you could get some sort of a sense of it. And, you know, like I said, those are things that I'm very passionate about and believe in very strongly. So I do want to commend the League for putting this up. Thank you so much for doing it. It is a very timely thing to talk about, not just, I think, as it relates to finances, but I think above and beyond that as well in terms of what those finances enable or disable our communities to be able to do.
You guys talked a lot about how the states were cutting funding to those counties, cities, and townships and everything. On the state side, though, is their revenue that they keep being passed on to the citizens in the same manner, or is it, how is their fiscal situation? Are they doing it out of necessity? Or can you speak a little bit on that?
Should we go in order from county, city to township, and each of you give? Thank you.
For the state,
They too suffered from the economic downturn. There was revenues that they have a wide variety of revenues they collect, and they too lost revenues with expenditures. They face a similar as each of us have faced, but on a larger scale, obviously, since it's at the state level government. I didn't come up prepared to speak to the state revenues as clearly as I can the counties. But I think some of the things that they've also dealt with trying to deal with some crisis, they've also tried to incentivize, our governor has tried to incentivize bringing economic development back to Michigan. In doing that, they also cut some business taxes, reduced business taxes. So there's been that trade-off. So for Washtenaw County, that's a harder pill to swallow because we sit here in the front backyard with University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, St. Joe's Hospital. For a county in Michigan, we have a very strong, as Mandy Grewal pointed out, strong economic basis here. We have a lot. We didn't get hit as hard in this county with the recession, and we rebounded much quicker than any of most of the counties in the state of Michigan. So it's a trade-off.
I want to reiterate some of that. We are fortunate to be in this community from a tax perspective because while it may be expensive, it's a desirable place to live, the city and the county, and we have fared much better. If you had a panel up here of outside Washtenaw County or some other place in Washtenaw County, it would be a much different, much more probably dire story. On the state funding, what I can see, and I don't study their budgets, their revenues have been challenging at times for them, but they're solving it with tools. I think the presentation, they're solving it with tools that hurt the locals. And, I think it's interesting, the name of the presentation was Is It Fair? Sitting in this profession, I would say, I don't know, I hate to put a value judgment on it like that, but I will say that it does seem that we've been ignored. The policy issues surrounding how to make the state work for everyone is what's been missing. These decisions seem to get made on the state level on macro policies. Should we have more income tax, less income tax, no income tax, without a dialogue about the services being provided at this level, not just their level?
And I'll probably piggyback off of what Tom just said as well and go back to the comment that I made when I was speaking with regard to maybe even throwing out the possibility of a constitutional amendment, because at some point, really, the discussion has to be about what resources are being expended by whom, who has control of those services, of those finances and resources, and what are they charged to do. So I think that's kind of really the larger question, and that debate, I do agree, is missing on a more macro scale, and I hope that once we start getting this picture more clear and highlighting this gap that the locals are facing and really reaching a crisis point now, that we can push and move towards that point.
In this time of constrained finances, one of the notions to deal particularly with infrastructure projects is the so-called public-private partnership. I haven't seen them explained in a way that makes good sense to me, and I'd really appreciate knowing what your thoughts on these are, if they're an issue in your particular area of government, and do you use them?
Kelly, I think you're on.
Public-private partnerships have been discussed. For the county level, we have to be careful to not enter into any agreement they may invalidate our ability to stand as a governmental agency. We've had discussions on various topics over the years. I mean, just casual, sometimes not to level internally, but if my corp counsel was sitting here next to me, he would be able to give me the exact wording for this, because we've had this discussion before, but we could invalidate our ability to receive some governmental funding in certain situations, especially if that public-private may involve a profit even for the private side. So there's, as Tom has addressed, there are the counties, the villages, the cities, the townships. There are a lot of rules that really box us in on what we can and cannot do to fulfill the needs. So we've talked about it. We haven't found a solution yet, but we will continue to talk.
That's a great question, because public-private partnerships come in all flavors, the city, as one of our tools to solve problems, that is something we look at. A couple examples of ones that we have, for example, The Leslie Science Center that we have in town is actually managed by a nonprofit. It's not city employees, so it's a non. That's one relationship to help us actually operate government. Another one is there was a downtown, the city apartments project was city land. The city invested through the DDA to build a parking deck, and on top of that is an apartment complex. That would be a public-private partnership with a for-profit entity. We had many, there are benefits, pros and cons to it, but that was one we saw a net upside to that for developing property and increasing parking, solving some other structural issues that we had downtown. So those are just a couple examples. We would not, you know, in this community, something like toll roads, you know, that would seem to be not make a lot of sense, but those are the kinds of things that are possibilities for wherever the government infrastructure interacts with the private sector. We have our own water plants. Now, that could be operated by a private entity. We actually do that ourselves with government employees. So, I mean, there are opportunities for those things to occur, and where they make sense, we explore them if we find that there's a benefit.
So with my administration, I think the tack that we take, because I did come on at the depths of the deep recession, was, you know, to establish specific budget lines where we can accept donations from private companies, specifically for quality of life projects. So we want to do public art. We have a tree mitigation fund. We have a sidewalk maintenance fund. The township has done tremendous amounts with regard to expanding non-motorized and multimodality in our community. We've done that through county, state, and federal grants. But for the long-term maintenance, we want to make sure that we have money to maintain those facilities and amenities. So we're really relying on new developments that come in to make donations to those line items. We have Wolverine Pipeline, for example, that came in, and of course the feds fork, everybody said yeah, go in. Well, we negotiated with them, and they're contributing about $25,000 to our tree mitigation fund, which we're going to go back to rehabilitate some of the habitat that they are destroying right now. So those are some of the examples. That's sort of the tactic that we've taken with regard to engaging with the private sector and making sure that they're contributing back to the community. And like I said, it's mainly around quality of life projects, like we like to call. In addition to that, I don't know if you'd call it a public-private partnership, but again, going back to the question of roads, I think the private businesses, the business parks, which we have quite a few of in Pittsville Township, are increasingly paying for road maintenance and road repair on their own. So they have to cough up the money more and more now to be able to do that, because we have such limited funds. We focus our monies on the roads in our residential neighborhoods and the primary roads. We have nothing left over when it comes for business parks. We're looking more and more to our companies and business parks to pay and cover those costs as well.
Someone else. I'm going to pick the lady over here. She hasn't asked a question yet. Then I'll come back to you, sir.
Should we have more consolidation of services? Are there too many small units of government if we have 1,773 units of government? Could there be more efficiencies if we had fewer units of government?
That's a political question. I'm actually from North Carolina. I know that it does vary across the country. In North Carolina, for example, in some other states, you might have a city and then you have a county, and they aren't the township structures. It does vary. I'm not going to express an opinion on that. The people do like representation, and finding that level of representation that best matches your constituency is important.
And I know that debate or train of thought did catch on a lot of traction probably, what was it, about 6 years or so, 6-7 years ago. There was a lot of discussion statewide. The governor was really trying to push for it, and there were a lot of committees and groups formed and think tanks and retreats, et cetera, et cetera. And it didn't really happen, again, I think probably because of the long-standing entrenchments and sort of the affiliations that people feel at this time to their local units. And I think that again speaks back to the fact that the local units are the one functioning unit of government in Michigan today, and folks don't want to lose the front lines. They don't want to lose, you know, their mayor or supervisor or whoever the case might be, because they know where he or she lives, they know they're accountable, they know they deliver services. They don't want to lose that, right? So I think that's kind of where it came to when it was gaining some traction, I think, again, right, about 6 years or so ago.
I think both Tom and Mandy have spoken to that fairly accurately, and I don't think I have much more to add, because I agree that it's the representation that people like having across a county, across the state of Michigan, knowing that they have someone they can go to locally, someone they can speak to, and have that voice. So could there be consolidation? You for a price. And it would be determination if that price is something that the community wished to pay. So that's really, that's a lot politically, and also the emotional connection.
The vibe I got from you guys was that this, revenue sharing problem is a problem of government for localities, and it goes across party lines. So even in a, say, Democrat or Republican area, the problem is still the same. And then another thing I got from you guys that was that a huge, cause of the problem was the Haley Amendment and Prop A. Forgive me for my ignorance on those two things, but my former statement where it goes across party lines on a local level, is there any political pressure? My thing is, if it's a problem that both Democrats and Republicans face, will there be any political pressure for, as you said, a constitutional amendment to sort of, revitalize how revenue is shared in Michigan?
I see it more as sort of a positive, right? Because more and more folks are looking, and hopefully they will want to look for bipartisan groups and solutions. So I think if both parties, it was a point I was going to make previously as well. So thank you for the question. And I think you posed it perfectly. So mm-hmm. I think you catch on very quickly. You will likely tend to have sort of the Republican support, because they tout fiscal responsibility a lot. And then you have the Democrats that are looking and seeing and knowing sort of the social chasms that have been created in our communities today, and know that we need to address them by retooling our local units. So I think there's a potential really to engage and fire up a bipartisan support base to change financing to local units. And state revenue sharing is one of them, and then really allowing us and not putting caps at the top, by way of how much we can recoup by, our property taxes, because they're tied to CPI right now and all of those sort of things. So giving us the ability, so we're growing and we're expanding our economic bases, whether through revitalization or new development, doesn't matter. Let us recoup those revenues, keep them in our communities, and service them back again. So I think it's actually a good thing that both parties could likely be engaged in this dialogue.
Yes, to speak on that, is that state of Michigan is one of the very few states that has a structure of Proposal A and the Headley reform. Many other states are not in the same environment, or at least at the local units of government are constrained in the way that we are constrained, because they don't have those caps in place that Mandy speaks to. I think when they were put in place 15 years ago, they were done with good intent to keep anything pricings and taxes to get out, not out of control, but at this point, we've reached that tipping point where that's now become a strangulation point. And I agree that it's a very good question, very good perception, that this is not a political party question, as it is an overall operation section. And I think as the more local units of governments, if we step up and push back and start saying, okay, this has now become strangulation, not just moderation, that will help lead to the discussions that need to happen to make those changes going forward. So, very perceptive. Thank you.
Tom?
Nothing to add.
Okay.
Can you speak to the opportunities to raise revenue that are available to you statutorily, and especially in light of a discussion that occurred maybe a month or two ago in Ann Arbor about a city income tax? I'm not saying just the city, but is... where can we find money that is available?
I think you're up.
For So available to us are voter millage. That's usually the most acceptable because that means it means that the voters of the community that they reside in, whether it be at a village, township, city, or county level, requires the community to come together and agree, much like the road millage, that is something they want. So that is the first item that is out there available to us. There's been times when our county board has issued non-voted millages, as we well know, that they can do that, but they don't do that very often, or only for very specific projects. And for one of them, there's a state law, a very old state law that was in place that allowed that to happen. It's very limited on what we can raise for that. The other question is we have our millage, our operational millage has been set at 5.5 mils. We're rolled back to about 4.52 at this point due to Proposal A Headley rollbacks that we've experienced over the last 30-some years. That mill equals about $14.5 million that the county has continued to step back from. That would be another millage or another voter they could put out saying, hey, we want to take back to what is our constitutionally approved level of millage. So most of any major revenue that could have any major impact has to be voter approved for the county.
There's kind of three general areas I can think of for revenue for the city. It's property taxes, an income tax, or fees for service. Generally, the city, we don't want to increase revenues. We have a lot of comments given to us that we're already an expensive community, so we try not to increase millages. If you look over the whole 10 years or more, you know, our millages are now lower than they were back then. And a few times that there's actually been an increase in a millage, it's only to the extent there were other millages that had decreased. So we don't actually have a net increase, I think, for more than 10 years. But it is a possibility. And then income tax, voter approved fees, we look at, you know, there's a question of whether or not any particular fee really should cover all the costs of the service or not. That's why we have taxes. There are many things that we provide that are not intended to provide self-funding. Otherwise, they wouldn't be done by the government. They would be done by the private sector if they did. So,
right, and we're not allowed to generate profit, so that's exactly it. Mm-hmm. So you have the user fees, which are really charged to be cost neutral. You have property taxes and state revenue sharing. Outside of that, if you want to increase your revenues, you go out for a millage or you go into debt.
Someone else? Question here? Okay.
So I'm relatively new to this area, and I'm trying to understand how road maintenance and snow plowing are funded in the city of Ann Arbor, because at least in other places I've lived, these are done much better. So can you explain where we get the money for that and why we don't seem to be able to get enough money to do this well?
One of the major sources of, so that comes from the state primarily, one of the major sources of revenue, it's called Act 51 funds to maintain roads. One of the major sources of that is the gas tax. And if you're new to the state, go back, I forget the time flies, a year or two. There was
about two years ago,
significant discussion in the state about how we approach road funding. There's more fuel-efficient vehicles now, so the gas tax was not collecting as much. The gas tax in Michigan was a fixed number, not a percentage, so it has not grown over a long period of time. Those are funds that come to us from the state that have not kept up with the costs. At a very high level, if you haven't seen the statistic, you know, Michigan in total invests some of the least in its roads dollar-wise of anywhere, certainly in the Midwest. So there's a lot of discussion about how do we invest in our infrastructure, and some of it is this tax policy question. There was a lot of discussion at the time about should we convert from a percentage base and increase that percent tax on each gallon of gas, and that ultimately was not approved. So that answer of how to get additional funding has not been answered.
Mandy, any additional
thoughts? No, I think that's kind of why we posed the tax in Washtenaw County. Like I said, it's never been done before, but again, because the state really couldn't get their act together. They kind of took money from one pot and put it into another, said, you know, if we have money in general fund, you'll see it, et cetera, et cetera. So hopefully with the new millage going into effect starting this year, you'll see improvements in the quality of your roads and their general maintenance.
I have a question right here.
Could I add a point to that, actually?
Sure.
Did you have something?
No, go ahead.
So one of the solutions that was approved recently, since you're new to the state, the state committed to dramatically increase funding for roads. It's interesting, though, that that commitment, which occurs over 5 years, they did not have identified source of revenue. Some of it was natural growth in the state's revenues, and then they said, well, if growth when growth comes, we'll just give you more. And then there's even more on top of that, of just unidentified where it's going to come from, but it's just going to come from the state. So, you know, as other units of government on looking to receive that, we've got a pretty skeptical eye given our history with other types of mechanisms. But, I mean, while there is an interest and an appeared commitment to increase running for funding for roads, it is yet to be seen. There have been efforts made. It's not an area that's not been looked at heavily.
Let me start with, forgive me if this is not as germane a question for this entity of government. My current focus is on education, and as someone who's lived in Michigan for 30 years, I have been greatly frustrated to see, I'm going to try not to be too partisan here, I see a lot of the problems with the educational funding as being fairly partisan. I'm wanting to tie into some of this man's questioning earlier. My sister lives in California, and they too struggled with something that strangled the educational system for a generation. Governor Jerry Brown recently has done something that was definitely, in doing the gerrymandering, has done something that has helped to get some relief on this, and saying, we're going to have the top two people run against each other, and I don't care, it doesn't matter what party they're from. Do you think such a thing in Michigan, thinking specifically about education more than the other kinds of funding we've talked about here, would help Michigan to get better funded in the area of education? Again, I'm thinking about all the damage that Betsy DeVos has done, and please understand, I understand we're in Ann Arbor, and we get insulated from a lot of it, but I'm thinking about educational policy for the state.
Can I put in a small advertisement while you think about your responses? An advertisement for joining the League, which is going to have next week a discussion of redistricting for members, for League members, not open to the public. So there's a table outside. Getting involved in the League as the League looks at redistricting and what it wants to accomplish through that might be a timely thing to do.
I will apologize. I do not speak well on the education funding. I'm not involved with that, but I think I'm going to tag on to Harvey. I think that may be a next conversation and next group meeting that might be beneficial to bring some of the local educators and their finance people in to have some of the conversation, because I think they would have a better perspective than I do. So I apologize. I really don't have much input for you on that. Just not something I touch on enough basis that I can speak with any sort of intelligence.
No comment.
Andy, anything?
Well, not much. And so, but I think I might just say that, you know, to the point that I made during my presentation, which is we have to think about the quality of life that we are providing for our communities, because when you affect the local units, like I said, we lost $11 million in the eligible manufacturing tax exemption that was passed through. That $11 million, part of that affects the schools. It affects the libraries. So local financing, when you're talking about, well, the state is messed up, their policies are messed up, they're not funding, but when you cut local units, you are cutting all of those things, because we have the schools, we have the libraries, we are at the front line. So this is all really intrinsically linked together. So I would really encourage you all to really think about it in a more holistic fashion, because it's not just about us picking up the garbage and running the police cars and that sort of thing. It really goes above and beyond that into the types of communities we want to be for our children.
If I can, I'd like to add A couple of years ago, I spent almost a year going to Ann Arbor school board meetings, and I was struck one night when, at that time, the vice president of the board, Christine Stead, made a comment about Proposal A. She said, you know, if the Ann Arbor school system had the revenue that it had in 1994, when Prop A came into effect, adjusted only for inflation with no other increases, a couple of years ago, she said, we would have $53 million more in our budget than we currently have. At the time, the school board budget was about $180 million. So she's saying that Prop A has led, as I understand it, to the school system having almost a 30% decrease in what revenue it should have had available over the course of the Prop A to 2000 and, let's say, 2014. It's just a major problem that local governments, probably libraries and everyone else, districts or school districts are dealing with. And the fact that most people are not aware of this, I'm so glad you're here tonight to hear this part of the discussion.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to have someone over here.
I hope you'll excuse me for having a couple of questions. But the biggest one is that I haven't heard very clear next steps. So I heard the idea of a constitutional amendment. Someone talked about a lawsuit. If we were to walk out of here and do something about this, what might that thing be? So that's kind of the headline question. And my brain is working around this because getting people excited about budgetary stuff is, I'm sure you guys know, not easy. I'm frankly impressed that there's that many people here. And if we wanted to talk about this in a broader way, I'm sure as soon as you talk budget, some people's eyes are going to glaze over. But I'm curious if there, I mean, in some ways, the Flint water crisis, I'm wondering if that is in any way connected to the level of funding, for example, that might be something to get people excited about the impact that this might have. And then I was also just curious, Tom, you talked about talent, and I would love a little bit more explanation about what you're looking for there.
I've lost track.
Tom, too. On the headline question, you know, I think the most useful thing for action in this area is to do anything you can to encourage the state to have a conversation about how to fund every entity below the state. Because as we've said, library, schools, local governments, counties, we're all under this property tax issue, as well as these other issues that are driven somewhat from the state. So really encouraging, solve my local entities' financing structure. That's a really important topic.
Sorry, just to clarify, does that mean contacting a state representative?
Oh,
what does that exactly look like?
You know, organizations like this, actually, and others similar to this, can band together, can raise the issue. Your community, your county, village, townships, we try to raise it through our mechanisms, but it makes a difference when residents do it through their representatives, through emails or through organizations. It does make a difference. So on the headline question, that would be my encouragement. On the Flint, you know, I'm in general, let me just step back and try not to tie everything to Flint, but with the general constraint of taxes to government over decades now, I think you get things which we see in Michigan, like the bigger, more expensive items not being addressed, because you don't see them, you don't feel them. It's easy to not invest in this or that each year. And we're going to see that nationally to some extent because it's and, you know, I think Flint, I don't know that I'm not going to opine on any of the details of that situation, but clearly infrastructure in this state needs more investment, and it's got to come from somewhere. So as far as talent, there has been a trend in government now for some time to be more businesslike. Government is different than business, but there are things in business like efficiency and thinking about decisions in the terms of return on investment. It may not be the same capital measure, but because you're looking at social investment returns as well. But those kind of concepts are all good. But bringing in the new generation of people who are interested in really making a difference in the world, it's the millennials group, as I'm experiencing hires, there's a segment of that they're really interested in that kind of thing. But we as an employer of the long term, we're in an environment where for us to afford benefits versus going to a tech startup here, for example, and it might be one that helps, you know, a segment of the community that's rewarding to the employee, that's hard to compete against. So not that we're competing for tech people necessarily, but in general, you know, you need to provide a fair living wage to people and benefits to attract them, in addition to having what I believe is a really powerful incentive already just because of the rewards of the work. But it is a challenge for us. This state, this community, this area has very low unemployment. It has historically had very low unemployment, so it's difficult to compete for talent.
You to go? Okay. I might actually combine my responses to one and two, which is the takeaway and the talent part of it. I would say get more involved with your local unit, like not just like by showing up to meetings, but learning more about what they do and how they do it. Local government isn't sexy. It's not covered in the New York Times. It's not something that's, whoa, the mayor did this today, you know, maybe to a certain extent, but not the day-to-day, not like we passed a resolution to take a stand against human trafficking. You know, those sort of really meaningful things that happen at local government, very few people get engaged with them and involved in them. And then I think just the stuff that we're talking about today insofar as, you know, the monies that you give to local units are the most accountable tax dollars that you will spend. So follow those. Follow your tax dollars. Get to know how your community, how your leadership, how your township, village, county, whatever, is spending those taxpayer dollars. And then I think that's a really good way to engage the citizens of our community, because as Tom says, that's one of the challenges we have in local unit, is to get people interested, involved, because people aren't that engaged with the local unit, so it doesn't even pop up in their radar screen as a possible career to choose or go after, right? And so you're repeatedly sort of doing things in ways that have been done before. I'm a graduate of the University of Michigan, so I've really consciously gone out and reached out to some of the schools over there, some programs and courses, and we get the students to come in and work with us and do any projects, any biannual surveys, whatever they want to do, customer satisfaction, whatever it takes for them to stay engaged with the local government, because it's not just that they learn, it's because we learn. It's so nice to have these young kids walking around at Township Hall just throwing out these great ideas, you know, things we would never have thought about because they come in all fresh, and it's great, right? So I think that's really would be my perspective on your question. With regard to Flint, I think I made that point already. I do believe very strongly in infrastructure, and actually, I hate to keep saying this, but SEMCOG is having the exec committee tomorrow, which I sit on, and they are going to be talking. There's a report that's coming out from the state that's talking about how many billions of dollars we need every year to get back on track to what we need it to be even 2 decades ago. It's not even a decade now, I believe it's 2 decades ago. So I think the consciousness of sort of what happened in Flint is flowing down and folks are reacting to that. My point is that, you know, we need to be more sort of preventative in these measures, right? You don't want a huge failure to occur because it impacts the health and well-being of citizens, which is, you can't put a price to that. So I believe very strongly in that point.
To try and get my head wrapped around, though, what they've commented on, to say that in regards to Flint, that is an emergency. There is going to probably be other emergencies across the state because infrastructure is the easiest issue to ignore or push aside during economic downturns. I mean, the county did the same thing. We thankfully did not have any critical emergencies, but we did, you know, extend the life of buildings, extend the life of machinery. That's happened at the state level, and that's what Flint is also about to a certain extent, trying to find cost-cutting measures and trying to find, you know, trying to make do. I think across the state of Michigan, the entire infrastructure is old. Our roads are old. Pipes in many areas are old. So I don't
blame Flint. I don't say the money's being flowed there. It's just that, that we're going to probably continue to have emergencies. Before the Flint, we were dealing with the Detroit Public Schools. So there are various things that will always always occur in any given time. The best thing, as I said, reach out to SEMCOG, Michigan Municipal League, your local governments, your state reps. Like I said, you have Yusuf Rabi, who just came from Ann Arbor. He's one of your state reps now. Ronnie Peterson, he's also up there. Just local people who've been here for years in the county, in city, coming from the city of Ann Arbor, city of Ypsilanti, that will leave in this community, expressing to them the desires that you want to see them moving ideas forward in the committees that they sit on that will help support the revenues, change and modify how they're structured so that local units of governments at all levels will begin to see an increase in them flow so they can also increase the support they're given to the community. I think we've all expressed the same issue with the talent. As we compete strongly because we do have the lowest unemployment in the state sitting here in this county. We compete with some high technology firms that are now coming into the area that are building up. So we compete as a county level. I compete with the University of Michigan, Eastern Michigan University, St. Joe's, large employers with a strong base. So we have to find the people that are passionate about government, passionate about serving. So I think that's why Mandy reaches out to some of those people, that groups, to help continue that passion, that to serve the people, to serve the communities, is what that is about. So we will continue to have that fight because we will be constrained by revenues. Benefit packages will not be that what a private. Bonuses cannot be offered, you know, like the private companies can do. Even the automakers have rebounded, and those people are receiving very large bonuses at this point in time during the recovery. We don't, as a county government, we are under scrutiny. We don't have those flexibilities. So we have to find that passion in people that are willing to forego some of that to be able to with us.
And then neglected to say vote.
Yes.
The city clerk would ask me to say that, I'm sure.
And I think that's just about all the time we have for questions.
I want to echo what Mandy said. In fact, all of our speakers just been excellent. But attending the meetings going on around you, Ann Arbor City Council, County Council. When I had a partisan hat on, I was a precinct delegate in Scio Township for the last 2 years. I went to a vast majority of the meetings. You know who came to the meetings? People who applied for this permit. Then they went home, and then there was nobody but me. I went to a year of school board meetings. You know who goes to school board meetings? People getting an award, people with kids about to play something at the beginning, and then they go home after public commentary, and the board meets till 1 a.m., and I stayed till 1 a.m. watching them. I'm sure thousands were watching on CTN. Sure, it's the only thing that you need to be active. You need to join the league. I'll throw that advertisement out there. But you need to be aware. How many of you are Facebook friends of SEMCOG? Yeah, me neither. This is a hugely important organization for you.
For all of the governments here.
That's what I mean. And how many of us are really aware? I want to thank, on behalf of the League of Women Voters, not only our excellent panel. I thought the answers were great. The questions, really good. The answers just brought out a lot of information.
Thank